At Milk Road, we believe that token networks, powered by software and governed by communities, have enormous potential to impact the world economy and society at large. This belief is guided by three foundational principles: self-custody, open innovation, and community ownership. One of the best examples of living these principles is SAFE. SAFE originated from a concept as timeless as innovation itself: build something you would use. This ethos led the Gnosis team to develop a multi-sig wallet to manage their own asset security. This tool quickly gained traction, positioning SAFE as one of the pioneering on-chain tools to achieve product market fit. Fast forward to today, SAFE boasts impressive metrics. It secures over $100 billion in total value across more than 50 networks. It processes over $1 billion in monthly ETH transfer volume. It supports 8 million SAFE accounts. It handles 42 million transactions. And over 200 projects are developing with SAFE's smart accounts and tooling capabilities. Today, we are joined by Lucas, co-founder of SAFE, and Andre, the head of governance at SAFE. In this enlightening conversation, we discuss the community vote to make SAFE token transferable as of April 23rd, and why SAFEDAO decided to separate TGE from transferability. We also discuss token utility, the future of smart accounts, and the various layers of abstraction, including network abstraction, and the business model of SAFE now and in the future. Welcome to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. I'm Jay Hamilton, and I believe that on-chain is the next online. This is the opportunity, and I'm here to guide you to capitalize on it. Let's jump into this fantastic conversation with Lucas and Andre from SAFE.
Crypto will go up more than 100x in both users and value over the next decade. If you're listening to this right now, you're extremely early and have an incredible opportunity to capitalize. At Milk Road, our mission is to make you smarter about crypto. That's why we're doing today's podcast and why we send you a daily newsletter for free. But if you're ready to level up as an investor, then let me tell you about Milk Road Pro. We crafted this resource for investors who are already smart enough about crypto and are looking for more actionable insights and how to invest successfully in one of the fastest growing industries on earth. Every week, we break down the latest trends, dive into tokenomics of popular and up and coming tokens, and get into the nitty gritty of market analysis, all to help you invest smarter. Plus, we have a private Discord community for pro members. It's like your backstage pass to the Milk Road crew, exclusive insights, hot tips, and live AMAs with our team. Now, if you're looking to level up as an investor, then click the link in the show notes below and sign up to Pro today. Don't let this bull market opportunity slip through your fingers.
GM, Lucas, Andre, welcome to Milk Road Radio.
GM, thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
Super excited to have both of you. Lots to talk about when we talk about SAFE. But I want to start sort of at the origin of SAFE. SAFE was really built with the classic adage that you build something you yourself want. And the Gnosis team needed a multi-sig to secure its funds. And so they built that. And then that sort of proliferated and became a suite of DAO tools. And SAFE really was sort of the first DAO tool to find product market fit, as many others said, oh, wow, we also need that as well. Take us back to the beginning, and what was the initial vision for SAFE when you spun off from Gnosis, and how does that lead us to up until today?
So Gnosis, as maybe if you know, originally started to build prediction markets. So that's a primitive that aims to have like a financial incentivation to source information from people. So in order to make predictions, you have a financial stake that people can in a way bet on, and then you can source what's the most likely outcome. That was the idea. Gnosis did an ICO in order to build this, and they happened to run into a lot of challenges on the way because it was 2016, 2017, and a lot of the infrastructure, a lot of the things that we today expect were just not there yet. And one of the things was they raised funds from the ICO, and they were just like sitting on a lot of ETH. And how do you manage this ETH securely? Like, you don't want to just put it on a private key and risk that I don't know, the key gets compromised and the entire funding for the project is gone. Mm-hmm. Stefan George, who's one of the founders of Gnosis, then wrote his own wallet, which was a multi-signature wallet, which allowed the founding team of Gnosis to jointly control an account and to manage these ICO proceedings in a more secure way. And they open sourced this multi-signature wallet. And that's one of the few things that worked quite well with Gnosis. Oftentimes, just build something themselves and then open source it. And it happened that everyone else started using it. So literally during the 2017 ICO craze, I would say like 90% of all the projects used the Gnosis multi-signature wallet because it was just the most battle tested. It was open source. It was available. And yeah, how it happens there that once a lot of people use something, they want new features. They want like a hosted version of it. They want to have all kinds of requests then come in. And Gnosis had to build a team to deal with that and to maintain the project. And the team was formed, got further adopted. And then the idea was like, let's bring like this technology, multi-signature wallets to everyone. And that's when the SAFE project was started within Gnosis. And over time, it just became so big that it kind of didn't make sense to have it as a side project. So that's when then it became a spin-off. And yeah, the SAFE then wasn't really a multi-signature wallet anymore mm-hmm. because this mm-hmm. new project was much more like the core technology under it is smart accounts, which means that it can program the ownership on-chain. And this programmability then have had all kinds of benefits for different user groups. And one of them is DAOs, as you also mentioned, because also Gnosis itself formed into a DAO. And from the founding team controlling that wallet, they wanted to give the ownership to like the entire community, like the GNO token holders should decide how the treasury should be used. And then the SAFE was the perfect tooling for that because it can reprogram how the account is controlled. And you just hand over the ownership to like a snapshot space, which then can vote off-chain and have like an on-chain execution of these votes. And so it was kind of the story of building for themselves. And it happened that the market was moving along with it. And yeah, now we're here, $100 billion of assets on SAFE, people using it from like the largest DAO treasuries to Vitalik Buterin himself and NFT mm-hmm. collectors. And it's became this like ubiquitous tooling that's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've certainly used SAFE on a couple of projects that I've participated in as well. So very familiar. So SAFE spun out from Gnosis back in 2022. And Lucas, I heard you say previously that when this happened, you guys sort of sat down and said, okay, what is our long-term mission here? What's our vision? And you said that the goal was for all accounts in Web3 to be smart accounts by 2030, whether they be DAO, whether they be company, whether they be individual accounts. How are we doing towards achieving that goal?
I think we're quite far along on this journey, at least when it comes to like high value user groups. As mentioned, like $100 billion of assets that's coming from like DAOs, market makers, venture funds, like all these high value user groups, which have mostly benefited from like the advanced security of smart accounts. So the ability to have like a multi-signature scheme, but also say you have like a very secure setup with multi-sig for all the funds, but then you can give a spending limits, for example, to someone in your team for lower risk transactions and kind of this balancing of accessibility and security was what made it quite useful for these high value user groups. But long-term, we think everyone using Web3 in any form, for any use case, any user group should benefit from smart accounts because they're programmable accounts, so it can have additional features. So we see it a bit like the move from like the old Nokia phones to smartphones because it can finally, you don't have to switch phones when you want to have like a new feature, a new button or something. Like you just have apps and you can put apps on the smartphone and it evolves over the needs and it can adjust to different users. And this flexibility really will, over time, reach everyone in Web3. So we set our mission to convert every account into a smart account. And it's been a niche kind of idea maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago when we set off. And nowadays, I think it's very broadly accepted, at least in the Ethereum ecosystem, that mm-hmm. that's where we should be heading. That's where the term account abstraction came up, which means exactly that. Let's make every mm-hmm. account a smart account. And most people nowadays believe in that mission.
Yeah, I think smart account is better branding than account abstraction. So, whoever came up with that term did a better job. Andre, I want to get you in just a minute to talk about the safe token. But before we do, I just want to want one more question around smart accounts, because I want to make sure that our audience and listeners really understand why smart accounts are so important in order to improve really just the usability every day. We all know using crypto right now is quite frankly a pain in the ass. It's not simple. It's not easy. There's so many steps and clicks you have to make in order to make transactions and bridging. And all of that is going to be solved, and we're heading in that direction. But in your mind, and Lucas or Andre, feel free to take this question, or would love to hear from both of you. What are the major things that you see that smart accounts are going to enable in the future?
I'll take that one, and then I'll pause for the next few questions maybe. So one of the key things is onboarding, because everyone coming into crypto space, like they need a wallet if they really want to do cool things. So obviously you can onboard on a centralized exchange, but you're very much limited what you can do there. You can buy and sell some meme tokens, but that's about it. And if you really want to interact with applications, you need a wallet, and then you have this situation where you need to write down a seed phrase because the wallet asks you to, and you write down these like 12 random words on a piece of paper, and then you realize, okay, maybe that's not a good idea because I don't know where to put the paper so that no one else finds it, but I also find it if I need it in the future. So if they're smart enough, they actually use a password manager or something like that to then secure the seed phrase. But in any case, it's like a huge struggle because private key management, it's not a new thing. It's been there since cryptography, and it's an unsolved problem to a large extent. Like, how can you distribute private keys to a lot of people in a way that's secure and convenient at the same time? And that's something smart accounts will solve over time, because they allow for different kinds of private keys actually to control wallets. So like right now you have these ECDSA keys, so that's the one that you write down on a piece of paper. But smart accounts also support pass keys, for example. Pass keys are private keys that are very much used in the Web2 space as well. Like Apple and Google and other big Web2 companies are very much pushing that because they want to get rid of passwords. Mm-hmm. And pass keys are just a better way to replace passwords, and they're supported by all password managers and so on. You can save them on iCloud keychain. And so suddenly, when you onboard to crypto, you don't have to write down a seed phrase anymore. You actually just add a passkey to your iCloud keychain, and that's then controlling your wallet. And this just 10x improves the onboarding experience, and it actually makes it feasible for people who are not that technical to then onboard. But then even when you start using Web3 applications, like there's all kinds of challenges, like, okay, I want to interact with this app, but it's on another chain. How do I bridge to this other chain? I need to have this native token on this other chain because they don't use ETH, or I need to bridge ETH to pay for gas fees, and like all these things, which I know some people might have gotten used to it, but it's definitely always for new users just a massive headache. And smart accounts can allow for sponsored transactions. So suddenly the app that you're interacting with is paying for your transaction fees, for example, which it's obvious when you go to a website, you're not paying for the fees that AWS charges to host that website. It's actually the website paying it for the users, because there makes sense. But in Web3, we got used to having people pay these microtransactions to pay for gas fees. That's another thing that can be solved. And there's like a whole range of UX problems. Like smart accounts will make possible that you don't have to care what chain an application is on. So you just interact with an app and whatever network, whether you take assets from one chain, you move them to another chain where you then interact with an app, these things should be abstracted away from the user. So it's just a massive user experience and security unlock.
Yeah, it reminds me of a past interview that we had with one of the founders of Web3 Auth, which is a smart account wallet provider. And he was saying that they'd worked with McDonald's on a Web3 campaign, and that through that campaign, they removed the seed phrase because no user that's signing up for McDonald's on-chain activity wants to set up a free seed phrase, or quite frankly, really cares about self-custody at that point in their journey. And yeah, he said they saw an 80% increase in conversion rate just from that simple change. It's amazing what I think we've all gotten so used to it, right? Like we're so accustomed to living in this world and operating in this way. And then you go to a normie and you're like, yeah, like, sure, go ahead, set up a wallet. And they're like, what? Like, what's a wallet? Yeah. Oh, and now I need a seed phrase. And where do I put this? Oh, I have to buy a safe. What? And I have to keep a safe in my house. Like it doesn't, it's not user friendly at all.
I mean, I'm surprised how many people actually got to that point, like how many people jump over those hurdles and actually use Web3, because it's non-trivial.
We're all here for the meme coins, right? Isn't that why we're all here?
I guess.
But I do think that like we're preaching like with self-custody, self-custody can be scary, right? So the vision of everybody wants to be their own bank or should be their own bank. It's definitely not anything that everybody buys into, especially when the risk attached to it. And I think like all the points that Lucas had mentioned, it's so incredible that this is so general purpose, a general purpose technology, and so flexible that you can start off so easy. So the example you brought up with maybe I get onboarded through a McDonald's campaign, but it's a reusable account. So now I have like a one-on-one signer, and now I get like more and more confident. I have more and more use cases, so I add maybe 2FA, so second signers. 2FA is very well known for everyone. Nobody's thinking about it, but in crypto, somehow we secure things in these 12 words. So I think like this sort of flexibility that one has, only that is possible with smart accounts. And that is like gradually, I think of it how a kid grows up with money and they have like the lanyard around their neck and that little thing. And when they have to pay like that, it cannot be removed, right? To then a fully fledged wallet. And in crypto, we're basically just giving them one solution, hoping it fits all needs, and a smart account can be really well and use case specific.
All right, let's go to the big news of the hour. This show, we are actually recording before April 23rd, which is the big date that's coming up that we're going to discuss in a second, whereas this actually is going to be published after April 23rd. So hopefully not too much happens in the next 2 weeks to change anything. But as of April 23rd, the SAFE token will become transferable. This is a major milestone, and not all tokens are created equal. They're not all created the same. There's so many ways to create a token. And in your case, you did something unique that not many have done, which was you separated TGE with token transferability. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the story and then of the steps that happened here and why you took these steps. And then we'll talk about what comes after token transferability on April 23rd.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's exactly what you're saying, like separating these events from one another. And looking historically, in terms of SEO, everything was in one. Also, the fundraising was included with promise of products, with the token, with distributing right away. And that just led, as we saw, like to a lot of chaos, at least. I mean, there is some of the projects that made it through that, that delivered not a lot, but definitely this one approach fits all is not something that going forward would work. With SAFE, as you said, it was separated. So the funding round was closed in September 2022. SAFE DAO launched, the SAFE token launched, but it launched non-transferable. And a lot of people always confuse what that means. Does that mean soulbound or how does that work? And it's pretty interesting because it's generally the ERC-20 contract. And very few know that there is an unpause or a pause function that can be called in the ERC-20 contract if added to it from the beginning. So the token was launched as pause and this function has to be called to unpause it. And once it's unpaused, it can never be paused again. But this function allowed to distribute the token to certain stakeholders. So to distribute it from the foundation to the foundation, to backers, to ecosystem participants that we call guardians that have been building over the years on SAFE technology, and to users. And so the interesting part is it could be distributed without having it transferable at the same time. So the timeline then was that after September, almost like 2 months afterwards, in November, there was a first vote on token transferability in November 2022, and that one didn't pass. And there were a couple of reasons for that, especially that the DAO was very early on, and a lot of internal processes still had to be figured out. Also, like the vision for the DAO, how should it fit into the broader SAFE ecosystem? Kind of saying, okay, so we're not ready for it, and we're opting for progressive decentralization. And after the vote got rejected, the DAO agreed on a roadmap on what milestones have to be achieved to bring this to a vote again. And here, like five milestones have been agreed upon by the delegates and by the token holders. One of them, that the user airdrop passes, that was just by time. One was to agree on a constitution. So what is like the North Star of the DAO? What kind of purpose does it have? Goals? How does it want to achieve this? That was the governance framework. So how do we make actually decisions within the DAO? How do we apply resources? What are we going to fund? How are we going to fund this? So this got into the resource allocation framework. And the very last stone for all of this was, how does the token tie into this? So what do we want actually from the design space of the token? So that was the token utility. And after working through these five milestones together with delegates and with guardians, so the ecosystem participants, once the last milestone was achieved, the DAO set up the proposal again to make it transferable. That was in May. And when it passed in actually yesterday, April 15th, 8 days later, it can become transferable. So on the 23rd of April.
I want to dive into some of those milestones, particularly around token utility. But before we do that, why don't other tokens decide to separate TGE and token transferability if it's so easy to do and it clearly allows for a focus on governance in the beginning, which we all, I mean, every token when they launch, you ask them what their token utility is and they all say governance. That's the main token utility initially, especially because most tokens haven't yet figured out. Look, it's easy to look at Ethereum and be like, yeah, they figured out this deflationary token mechanism. Well, we forget that Ethereum has been around for a decade and they've had a long time to figure that out. It is difficult to figure out that type of tokenomics. So why is it that most tokens don't separate these? And what do you think, maybe do you think that more tokens should be separating these two events?
I think it's definitely just like a new concept and a new way of approaching it. Since we've launched this one, we're covered by different like DAOs, newsletters, and people have looked at this and seen it as, okay, so this is real progressive decentralization. This is something where there's no distractions, there's no transferability out, there's no, also the DAO treasury is not available for anything. So I think people see like kind of the advantages, but also the challenges, and look at us kind of how this went. I do think there's other DAOs that have gone this route at a smaller scale and have experimented with it. But I definitely think progressive decentralization is definitely nothing new, and everybody does it in a different way. Mm-hmm. Tying it to the token, making the token transferable on different milestones, I think at our scale that is unique. But I think definitely it can serve, and I already heard like it serves as a blueprint for other projects.
What do you expect to see on April 23rd, obviously, when this episode comes out, we'll be past that date. Any expectations on your end? Any challenges or fears that you have?
I think everybody is within or very well prepared in the sense of like having worked for a long time towards it. I think what the most people are excited about is about having new people join the DAO. Mm. So new governance activity. And so far it was very possible to be very active in the DAO, otherwise we wouldn't have reached all these milestones, but it was always through delegation or was not really possible to get own voting power because you couldn't transfer it. So I think definitely one of the things that is exciting and maybe a bit scary, but it's more exciting, is kind of having new people join the DAO and a really new activity to it and bringing it to a new level. And I think that the good thing is that all of these frameworks are not just frameworks just to have them, but it's really to kind of prepare for that scale. And mm-hmm. So we have like quite a resilient structure from the get-go now. So especially when it comes to defining exactly stakeholders to capture resistance, etc. So I think that is something that is exciting. And I know that a lot of people are kind of interested to getting more involved. And that probably is one of the major things you always hear, like, how can we get involved? How can we be part of this? And there will be a very clear path forward for that.
I just want to go back for a second. So you mentioned this pause function in an ERC-20 contract. So is it as simple as you just flip a switch basically, and then it becomes transferable? Is it that simple?
Well, at the end, it seems like a switch, but there's a process beforehand. And it's very interesting because it's safe DAO's governance is off-chain. So it's off-chain votes through Snapshot, mm-hmm. which a lot of people know as a tool where decisions can be made and then they can be executed through, it's called reality.eth on-chain. So there's a sort of bridge that brings off-chain decisions on-chain. So that is how it works. And through this transition on-chain, then this unpause function is being called, and that would be the switch at the end. Mm-hmm. But it all comes out of or goes back to the DAO vote on Snapshot that has passed yesterday.
And obviously, when a token becomes transferable, there is opportunity now to speculate on it, to buy and sell out of it. Is that a factor that you consider when so many, we've recorded a few podcasts recently, we've had Etherfi on the podcast and we've had Mode on the podcast. So my mind is very much in points programs, which I know is not your objective by any means, but my mind is very much in this incentive mechanisms and how chains are and blockchain is able to use capital formation in order to incentivize users and incentivize developers. And so we've talked a lot about having the need to have a season one and then a season two and how far can you go with that and the considerations that go into the ensuring that users and developers stick around combined with building out long-term product market fit. Now, in your case, you have very strong product market fit, so maybe you don't need to consider these incentive mechanisms as much. But is there concern on your end of people, as a result of April 23rd, selling tokens and just moving out? Or do you think that'll balance out because, as you mentioned, more will just move in?
Yeah, I think these are kind of like two questions. One is the idea of what, like, host speculation having a like potentially a price out influences mm-hmm. like the roadmap or influences certain things. And I like I think this is something exactly we talked about. If you like decouple the protocol, the building of it, building out structures from then launching the token, like you have these resilient structures. It's not like that the team has just formed a roadmap and decision on it, and then the token is out. So I think that the effect of any sort of speculation that happens in the market around it is nothing that influences internally mm-hmm. any sort of operations or product, not within the DAO. This second question around incentivizing and rewards is also something that we're looking at. So also on the 23rd, we will launch a rewards program. You might also call it a points program, but I think this is like a catch-all for a lot of different things, how it's being done. For us, rewards program is primarily about discovering, exploring how safe users are using the safe technology. And there's so many different ways. As I said at the beginning, it's like a general purpose technology. And sometimes it feels a little overwhelming. There's so many things you can do. So what we're exploring through that is, for instance, making your safe account more secure. For instance, turning on a recovery module and you get incentivized for this, adding a second signer. There may be certain things that need a little bit of extra push for people to do. And that is something that I think that incentive and rewards program are good at if structured correctly. And the second part is highlighting different parts of the safe ecosystem. And maybe people on here know that you don't have to use, for instance, Safe Wallet, our own interface for it, but there's several interfaces that build on top of Safe. So being able to explore these through an incentive program, different industry verticals from identity to bridging, etc. This is something that we will explore with this points program or with the rewards program. And I think that kind of like decoupling this plus having a product with product market fit, but that is so general purpose that it makes sense to highlight certain things, is a huge chance, more than a challenge.
Yeah, and it makes a ton of sense that you're launching a, whether you want to call it points program, rewards program, incentive program, various words for the same thing. That's called Safe Pass, I believe, that exactly. launches on April exactly. 23rd as well. We'll link to that in the show notes because I think all of our listeners, if you're not already involved in Safe, even if you are involved in using Safe products, you should check out the rewards program because you might be able to get some rewards for your activity. I want to go to the token utility. Tell us a little bit about what is the purpose of Safe Token? How is it being used? How have you thought about the token utility as you built it?
And token utility has been the last milestone mm-hmm. towards token transparency. Like, there was a lot of discussion and a lot of attention around it. So how we approaching it is that there is no thing like now token utility is done, right? But it's something that also evolves and evolves in parallel to the product and parallel to how users use it. If one has a look at the token utility framework as it's outlined and agreed upon by the DAO, what it first does is outline the token utility right now, and it is at the core governance, mm-hmm. which means the decision about the treasury of the DAO, also the decisions about like meta governance, so how certain decisions are being made. But it also opens up a clear path for the design space and future explorations of it. And we did feel that this also was the push through the delegates to kind of showcase, okay, so how can the token tie in right now or in the future? And how we're thinking about it often a lot is like different layers. So different layers of abstraction. At the middle, you have account abstraction that abstracts it away from a lot of complexities when it comes to the keys. But then the next layer, you have network abstraction. So abstracting it away from the complexities of having gazillions of L2s out there mm-hmm. and not knowing anymore how to manage funds across it. And then the next one, which is more industry specific, is payment abstraction. So being able to pay for goods and services and without actually thinking in which digital currency it would be. And the last one is security abstraction. So really being able to have this modularity within smart accounts, but still to have them safe, secure, and to have them in a way that they're really interoperable and that different smart account standards work across different standards. And that is something where we outlined or where was outlined the design space for it, and where now the DAO actually is being funded and is being incentivized to actually look how the token can play into these abstraction layers. And we do have a resource allocation that's called OBRA. It's outcome-based resource allocation. And one of the strategies exploring different utility explorations. So there's a working group that has actually also yesterday on the 15th has been approved, and that is looking alongside the product stack for future explorations of the token. So it's kind of showing the direction, like knowing where we are, which is the core governance, and kind of like shining the light to the right direction instead of having a blank canvas and exploring. Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. Is there any timelines that you, I mean, obviously these are all working groups that I'm sure are rapidly prototyping and testing out different things, but these four sort of categories of abstraction you talked about, particularly, I mean, network abstraction is one that just stands out to me as such a need in the space. As you said, we're not slowing down in launching more chains. We're actually speeding up, which is not a bad thing by any means. All these chains are able to create innovation and new use cases and focus on building features and different product suites that help different developers in different ways. Do you have any, and Lucas, maybe this question goes to you as well, any timelines on when you see progress happening around network abstraction or these other categories that you mentioned?
As you say, it's non-trivial because there's quite some complexities to each of them, and we're really at the beginning. But definitely the network abstraction part, like I think we need to make significant progress this year because we are at the point where there's like new L2s popping up everywhere, and this is not a sustainable way to onboard people to Web3. And we need a solution where people come, they get a wallet, and they don't have to care what network they interact with, and especially with smart accounts. And there's this thing that maybe in the next weeks we will hear more about, is like a key store rollup, which is really the one of the ways to achieve this network abstraction, by having like a, it gets a little bit technical, but having like a place where your account lives, your account logic, but then all the different layer twos on there, you can as a user like CK proof towards this account. So just verify that this is your account and then execute the transaction on this layer twos. And this is the technical thing that's under the hood. And this will then allow for this network abstracted world. And there are certain needs there within these key store rollups, which may benefit from a token being part of it. Because like these CK proofs or like how these key store rollups work in general, there's always the trade-off that has to be done between decentralization of it, like how trustless is it, speed of it? How fast can you actually make these authentications? And when you change something on this keystone rollup, how fast is it propagated and so on? And cost, because it can be very trustless and go via layer one, or it can be less trustless and be more kind of a trusted system to propagate this information. And like to make these trade-offs and to implement them, like a token can play a huge role. So I think that's one of the key things probably this year which should be explored, next to maybe like other topics. Also to just build on what Andre has been saying around these different abstraction layers, like another way to look into this, or another way to look at this, is to see smart accounts like a smartphone, which you can build applications on it. And then what we eventually want to build is the app store for this smartphone. If you think about how apps work on a smartphone, like you go to an app store, which you trust in a way, and you have a curation mechanism behind it. And then you download apps, and sometimes they're for free, and sometimes you pay for it, and sometimes they're for free, but then you pay for it within the app. And like all these things actually have a comparison then to smart accounts. Like you have like these features that will be implemented for smart accounts. We call them modules. Sometimes they're also called plugins that can be created. And there's always this challenge, like which ones I trust and which ones I don't trust. So there's some need for verification, for curation that's behind it. But there's also a need then for these plugins to monetize. So they want to charge fees. Could be like a DeFi plugin. There's this idea of having account native yield. So you just deposit assets to your account and these plugins just create yield out of it. Mm-hmm. And there need to be ways for then these plugins to become like a sustainable business or to somehow monetize. And like these things can then all benefit from having a token involved, because it can be like a curation mechanism, like a decentralized curation mechanism. So it's more like a community controlled app store, so to say, but it can also be a way to facilitate payments between users and plugin providers and so on. So these are all things that will be relevant in the long run. Being said that, probably the network abstraction part is the one that's in the short term the most critical.
You bring up monetization and revenue and business models, and I want to chat about the business model for Safe and understand that. But before we get to that, you guys have had just an incredible year so far, hitting so many milestones. We mentioned the 100 billion milestone of TVL, making you the smart contract storing the largest TVL other than the ETH staker smart contract. So yeah, just incredible. What are the other major milestones that you guys have hit this year that you've been really excited to see?
For me personally, one exciting one is reaching 10 million smart accounts being deployed. And one of the major contributors to that is WorldCoin, which is interesting because probably 99.9% of WorldCoin users, so WorldCoin being a proof of personal protocol, they have a wallet and that's building on Safe, but most people have no idea that Safe is used under the hood, which is great. I love that. It's in a way how Linux works as well. People probably interact 10 times per day with a Linux system, but they have no clue that there's Linux running on this ATM they get their money from and stuff like that. That's a long-term vision, that Safe becomes so ubiquitous and everywhere, but still no one knows about it, but it touches everyone's lives. Exactly. And WorldCoin deploying 10 million smart accounts, or the ones that are maybe too early to tell and know when this is airing, but like entire L2s where everyone using a specific L2 is using Safe under the hood. This is going to be a major unlock, a milestone for Safe. But yeah, maybe Andre also has some of his favorites.
Yes, no, I think these ones were like the major highlights. I think there are some shift, like where people do know also that they're interacting with Safe, or like where they're excited about it. So for instance, when this airs for like Crypto the Game will just be done, they using Safe for the pot to distribute. And that is just something really interesting because it is something that is that easy to set up, something that a team feels comfortable, that I think 800 players feel comfortable to pull their funds there. Yeah, there's definitely the part of Safe under the hood and invisible to the end user, but there's also the part of Safe as a trusted brand and as a trusted technology. So yeah, we see tons of more social apps using it to onboard more users.
Andre, I know that you're participating in Crypto the Game. How are you feeling about your chances? Are you going to win?
First of all, I have no idea how I came that far. I think it's because I didn't stand out, which has been like the right strategy. So I'm just the right amount of inactive to not be eliminated immediately, but also not a target at all, because I am not really good at any of the games, nor do I include any cabals or anything. So somehow this managed to fly under the radar. No, but it has like, it's interesting. It's more of a networking event by now. And yeah, what we said is the unofficial conference that's happening. Yeah, we'll see.
That's great fun. Lucas, this episode comes out May 5th. I don't know if that changes your ability to talk about entire L2s that are going to launch on Safe as the default account, does it?
I mean, there's multiples, but one people know by now. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Let's go to the business model of Safe. Obviously, you're, you know, building this under the hood tech, as you said, that is being used from WorldCoin to Crypto the Game to SocialFi apps to even Gnosis, their new Gnosis Pay card, being used across so many use cases and so many different apps. What is the business model? How does Safe make revenue? Is there a set business model, or are you still exploring and figuring that out as you go?
So one thing I think we did really well in the past was to not sell any equity in some company to investors, because for Safe, really the thing that is most important is the Safe token and it having utility within the ecosystem. And this is actually even part of the Safe DAO constitution. So this North Star of the Safe DAO, to have the utility of the Safe token really be attached to the ecosystem growth. So Safe not just being a product, it's really this underlying infrastructure for this emerging ecosystem, with at some point every account being a smart account. It hopefully has quite some relevance to be like the underlying foundation to that. And so that we're thinking more in how can utility of the Safe token be implemented within this ecosystem. And that then goes back to this like App Store topic around security and payment abstraction, where this can be interesting, and network abstraction. And that's really the core focus. Yet still, we've seen this also with other projects like Uniswap. Uniswap also has this idea of there can be both monetization on the interface level, but there's also some value in the protocol itself. Mm-hmm. And so Safe also has Safe Wallet, which is like a showcase wallet that's building on Safe. And it would be a missed opportunity to also not capture some of that value there in some way. But the key thing there is to have it in a way that's actually community aligned, so that it actually, some of the value that's captured there actually goes back to the ecosystem. And there we have the foundations built with like the resource allocation framework and the way the DAO operates. And I think that's also something in the next weeks where we can share a little bit more how we're thinking about this part of the equation.
Yeah, it's something that we've talked lots about on our show and in our newsletter in the past, is this concept of value accrual to token holders is just an enormous potential that blockchain offers. That I guess you could say that holding a stock or an equity and having dividends is sort of similar, but this is a much newer, a much more direct way to do that, and to do it with governance attached. And so seeing Uniswap sort of being the first to think about that, voting around that, thinking that they might go in that direction, it's really exciting to see. So it's awesome to hear that Safe is also thinking in that way. Before we wrap up, I just want to give you both a chance to tell us what you see as next and the future, whether it be a year, a few years out, in each of your roles from the governance side and more from the building of all the Safe product side. What's on your roadmap for the rest of this year and beyond?
Maybe I'll start from the governance side or from the DAO side. I think after inception of the DAO, September 2022, working through the roadmap together with delegates and guardians, having that transferable token, I think like if we talk about 1 year from now on, one will really see the impact, but hopefully the impact a DAO can make on like the scalability of an ecosystem. So very often it's being said DAOs are dead, or it's being looked at the inefficiencies in DAO. And yes, and decentralized decision making, having a lot of decision makers can come and slow down. But overall, executing on the promise of like owning the ownership layer and having other people being able to contribute in a really scalable manner to an open tech stack, and seeing how our token and how the structure around it through all the people that are involved, how that can really facilitate this. I think that's going to be really interesting to see all the builders that will be building, not only through grants programs, but also through larger initiatives, not being value extracted or somehow feeling that they're subscribing to something, but they're actually owning the infrastructure that they're building on. I think this for Counter-Strection is kind of like something that we will see and that I'm very excited about.
Lucas, what's on your roadmap for the rest of the year?
Bunch of things. One key one will be, how do we actually have this network abstracted world for Web3? This is going to be a key focus. Another one is going to be achieving better recovery solutions. Also, we sometimes call them hybrid custody solutions, because they will allow to onboard really the next 100 million users to Web3 with some handholding. So the idea being that you don't have to onboard to a wallet and from day one have full self-custody, mm-hmm. but you can maybe onboard via centralized exchange to a wallet where the centralized exchange account still can recover your wallet in case you lose your keys, and or this recovery agent could be like a trusted entity, like a bank or something. And there's quite some dynamics there, like a lot of interested parties, also institutional parties that want to explore that. And that's something that I'm quite excited about. Other ones will be general onboarding tools for Safe, like pass keys will be something which will explode. And this will also contribute a huge amount to the growth of smart accounts. And then maybe finally, an interesting thing that's currently being discussed in the Ethereum core development community is a way that you can actually upgrade your current like legacy wallet to a smart wallet. There's some EIPs, so some Ethereum improvement proposals that are being discussed, EIP 3074 and EIP 5003, which would make exactly this possible. That you could say, I created originally with MetaMask my seed phrase account, but now I actually want to upgrade it into a smart account. Mm-hmm. And this is really going to be a huge unlock, because it will mean that everyone that's using Web3 right now can become a smart account users, and it will be easier also for applications and other stakeholders to really optimize for smart accounts, because they don't need to serve these legacy wallets anymore, because when in doubt, they could just upgrade them to smart accounts.
Yeah, so important that we don't leave all the legacy wallets behind. That would be a big miss. And I know that there's those EIPs coming up in a lot of talk. If anybody wants to learn about those, follow Lucas on Twitter, and he's talking constantly about EIP. Was it 3047? Did I get that one right?
3074.
3074. Man, it's all these EIPs. It's so hard to remember all the numbers. Holy geez. I also like that you mentioned this progressive self-custody. And Andres, you kind of mentioned this at the beginning of the show, actually. Not everybody wants self-custody. And I know that the decentralization maxis that are listening to this are going to be like, well, everybody must have self-custody and self-sovereignty and censorship resistance. And I believe in that stuff, and that's important. But there is a large spectrum here, and we need to develop tools and technology for the full spectrum, not just for one very small niche end of the spectrum. Do you guys have any ideas, or have you done any research on how many people actually want self-custody? And from like a normie perspective, do they even really care about that?
I think the number of people who really want self-custody is quite small. Mostly it's a necessary evil to get what people want, which is flexibility or control. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be locked into like a custodial system where the custodian dictates what they can do and what they cannot do. They want to do whatever they please, send assets wherever. And like, that's the cool thing about self-custody, but no one wants the responsibility. No one wants to have the security challenges, obviously. So that's something people take into account. And that's why I think where I'm a maxion is that people should have the right for self-custody. Mm-hmm. I think there should be a possibility, but most people probably would deviate to something that would look more like a hybrid custody system where mm-hmm. they have a bank, that maybe is checking each transactions and is blocking malicious transactions. But if they start blocking transactions they actually want to go through, they should have the right, they should have like a master key or a set of keys that they can take out and say like, now I cut the cords with this bank because I don't trust them anymore. And I would go full self-custody or migrate to another trusted party. Like that's really the thing that we should be after. Mm-hmm. And that's what we achieve when we have accounts be built on a decentralized ledger and having this composable architecture for user accounts. Because right now, if you have a bank account, they can just say, like, I cannot migrate your JP Morgan bank account to UBS because that's not the same system and so on. But if you have everything built on the same system, that will be possible. And then I'm going to lobby to wherever to make sure that this becomes a human right, that people actually can. Like in Europe, you have the right to own your data or to have your data deleted and so on. Like there should exactly also be a right for self-custody. And I think that's one of the things which maybe 5-10 years out, I don't know, maybe 20 years, but at some point that's something to strive towards.
Very well said. I completely agree. Okay, before we wrap up here, I just want to give you both a chance to tell our users where they can follow you, whether it be on X or whatever platform, and any final call to action or something you might like to see our listeners take action on.
I think a good way to follow us is on X or Twitter. I think that a good way to keep up with the DAO is actually going through our website and going there, and then to navigate to the governance tab and being able to see everything that goes on with the DAO. Otherwise, of course, we're also on Farcaster and any sort of platform.
And Andres, I know your tweets of Andre on X or Twitter. We'll put the link in our show notes. Sorry if too many people blow up your DMs. I hope you're okay with that. Lucas, what about you?
I'm also on X sometimes at ShoreLucas, S-C-H-O-R. My DMs are open, so slide in there if you have any questions on smart accounts. And yeah.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Well, thank you both so much for the time today. It's been an absolute pleasure to all of our listeners. By the time you hear this, the SAFE token will be transferable. I hope that those that are not already holders of SAFE tokens take this as an opportunity to join in to really a leading DAO that is showing the way for governance, a great way for anybody in the space to learn about governance and see what the opportunities are to get involved and also to learn the playbooks. And for anybody out there launching a token, I really hope you think about this concept of separating TGE from token transferability. It is a new playbook that I hope more projects will take on. Lucas, Andre, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. If you like this episode, share it and hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out on the next one. There's also a link in the description to our free 5-minute daily newsletter where we simplify crypto for you while making you laugh. And if you're willing to step up your crypto investing game, then we'll leave a link to Milk Road Pro as well, your number one resource to help you invest successfully in crypto. One final note, this podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto is risky, so you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and we'll see you in the next one.